Real quick, we have to take a break to acknowledge the sponsor of today's episode, which is Secret Nature. Secret Nature's ultra premium CBD gummies are crafted with real botanicals, nothing extra, and designed to fit right into your day with clean, purposeful functionality. So for me personally, I like to take one of their snoozer gummies in the evening to unwind and ensure that I get a good night's sleep. After a long day, especially when my brain is just still running a mile a minute and I can't seem to settle down, I'll take one to help me slow down, unplug, and actually get a good night's sleep. I personally don't drink alcohol because I just don't like the way it makes me feel the next day, but these gummies feel very clean, intentional, and it never leaves me groggy the next morning, just feeling balanced and rested. Secret Nature's gummies are organic and farm grown. They're never lab made. They're ultra premium CBD gummies made with real botanicals and nothing extra. You've got two purpose built options. There's Bliss for clear focus and productive flow if you want to take one during the day, and then you get Snoozers to help you relax and rest at the end of the day. Each gummy has consistent, measured CBD, so there's never any guessing, just clean, reliable functionality that fits naturally into your schedule. Get 30% off your first order at secretnature.com with the code MAMA. That's M-A-M-A. And just a heads up, their Black Friday sale is coming up, and they are going to be offering 25% off on orders of $75 or more, 35% off on orders of $125 or more, and then 40% off on orders of $150 or more between November 26th and the 30th. So don't forget to use my code MAMA when you check out. That's M-A-M-A at secretnature.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy to see if you could save when you bundle your home and auto policies. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Summer's here, and Nordstrom has everything you need for your best dress season ever. From beach days and weddings to weekend getaways and your everyday wardrobe, discover stylish options under $100 from tons of your favorite brands like Mango, Skims, Princess Polly, and Madewell. It's easy, too, with free shipping and free returns, in-store order pickup, and more. Shop today in stores, online at Nordstrom.com, or download the Nordstrom app.
Test, test, check, 1, 2. You know you need Unique New York. You know you need Unique New York. Does that sound all right? Ah, that's better. You can always tell something's missing when you get isolated results. Like AI that's only right for one of your systems. Get AI that can work across your data and applications. Learn more at IBM.com. The AI built for business. IBM.
Back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly, and today we're going to be talking about the Karen Reed trial. I'm going to be covering what happened yesterday, which was Monday, April 28th. I meant to get this recorded last night, but we had some storms roll through and I didn't want to have all of that noise in the background. So I woke up early to get this recorded this morning. So if my voice sounds like raspy, that is why. So I have to acknowledge that my weekly docket episode, I don't know if you guys follow me on Instagram, you might have seen this on my stories, but that last story, I don't know why my voice changed so dramatically. I tried to fix it on the recording. I probably should have just re-recorded it, but I had to just laugh at myself because it goes from me talking kind of normally, and then there's like a little bit of music, and then the next story is like, a woman in South Florida. And I'm like, why? What happened to my voice? I have no idea. But anyway, let's go ahead and recap what happened yesterday, Monday, April 28th. But before I do that, I do want to recap a little bit of last week that I can't remember if I covered completely. So Thursday afternoon, paramedic Daniel Whitley testified about his interactions with Karen Reed when John's body was found. And he recalled Karen being distraught, asking, how long can someone survive in the cold? But the defense questioned the consistency of his statements because there were discrepancies between his trial testimony and earlier accounts of what exactly happened. So essentially, he did not bring any of that up until later. And the defense is just trying to create doubt within the jury because why wouldn't you bring up what Karen was saying when John was found? Like, why remember it later when it just conveniently fits the Commonwealth's theory? And then Friday, the jurors visited the Canton home where John O'Keefe's body was discovered near the flagpole in the yard. And they examined the layout of the yard. Karen Reed's Lexus SUV was there. And this firsthand account really aimed to provide a little more context to the testimonies and the evidence that was being presented in court. And I think it also kind of set up for yesterday's testimony, which I'll touch on in a second. But we got into like the nitty gritty of all the cell phone data. So anyway, Friday afternoon, Dr. Gary Fowler, who was a pathologist, testified that Karen's blood alcohol content was 0.093% at 9 a.m. on January 29th, which is above the legal limit. And the prosecution aims to prove that if her BAC is still above the legal limit at 9 a.m., more than 8 hours when she says that she left John at the house, then her BAC at the time that she left John would have been even higher, supporting the claim that she was really impaired while she was driving, and then suggesting that if she would have hit John, she may not have known it because of how drunk she was. The defense countered that by saying that medical conditions could have influenced the BAC reading, and being over the limit doesn't equate to intent, but we're not really talking so much about intent. At the end of the day, it's the jury has to decide if they believe Karen hit him with her car or not. Whether she meant to or not, I guess, could play to the degree of the charge, but at the end of the day, is Karen the reason John died? That's what we're all kind of trying to determine here. So during the cross-examination, Karen's defense team suggested that her medical condition, specifically anemia and multiple sclerosis, or MS, could have influenced her BAC reading, but Dr. Fowler said that he did not believe that they significantly impacted the accuracy of her BAC result. Additionally, Dr. Fowler noted that the hospital's testing equipment is designed to flag potential interferences like that, and no such alerts were present in Karen's case. So it's also worth noting that the forensic expert Nicholas Roberts testified about retrograde extrapolation. I know it's like really scientific, but basically estimating what Karen's BAC would have been earlier in the night before her blood was taken at the hospital. So he's estimating that at the time of the crash, or the alleged crash, that her BAC would have been between 0.135 and 0.292, which is, you know, multiples of the legal limit. So I want to know what you think about that. Do you think that this was a blow to the defense? Do you think the jury is going to take this into consideration? Do you think it matters? Let me know what your thoughts are in the comments if you're listening on Spotify, or you can go on Instagram and leave it in the comments of the post that is associated with this episode. All right. Monday morning session of the Karen Reed trial picked up with some highly anticipated digital evidence. Now, after last week's site visit and medical testimony, yesterday, the spotlight shifted to the electronic clues. In the courtroom, the prosecution called Ian Whiffen to the stand, and Whiffen is a digital forensics expert, a product manager at Cellebrite, which is a company known for data extraction. We've heard Cellebrite throughout this entire trial, the first trial, we've heard it all over. Now, his testimony was expected to shed light on the controversial Google search that has become a key point of contention in this case, which is Jens McCabe, Haas Long to Die in Cold search, or How Long to Die in Cold. Jen is, of course, a friend who was at the house where John O'Keefe was found dead. And both sides agree that Jen McCabe did make this search, but the big dispute is exactly when it was made. So Ian Whiffen walked the jury through the technical details, and although it was easy to follow, it was incredibly boring, and I wouldn't be surprised if he lost a few people's attention in the courtroom. He testified that Jen's phone opened a browser tab at around 2:27 a.m. that night, among other things. She was also looking at a sports, like a basketball team page for her daughter. She looked up the Weather Girls, It's Raining Men YouTube video. So there was activity on the phone that night. However, according to Whiffen, the search itself, like the Haas Long to Die in Cold search, was not actually executed until about 6:23 or 6:24 a.m. that morning. So in other words, his analysis suggests that while a Google search page may have been opened, perhaps left waiting in the middle of the night around 2:27 a.m., the actual query, which was how long to die in the cold, was entered and run just about after 6:20 a.m. Now, he explained that the phone's timestamp for the search shows up at 2:27 a.m. only because that's when the browser tab was first created, but the query was finally completed hours later. This isn't really new information. We knew this was the prosecution's angle, but where I think he might have lost the jury, or at least if I was a juror, he would have lost me here, was when he tried to explain away the deleted search. So the analysis shows that the search was deleted. And if you have nothing to hide, then why would you delete that search? So Ian explained it away by saying essentially that the deleted status suggests someone removed it from the browsing history, but forensic tools still captured the artifact. And basically, he's confident that a human didn't actually delete the search, but that some process within the phone did it, like accidentally maybe. And for me, this is just one of those where I'm like, okay, it's like with the butt dials. How many butt dials can we make in a night? How many things can be explained away by accidentals or just, oh, that's just the way technology works. Like, I just have more questions. I need a little more proof than that. I still have plenty of doubt regarding that whole Google search. And I wonder if the jury does too. When it was the defense's turn to cross-examine, attorney Alan Jackson zeroed in on the 2:27 a.m. timestamp. And this was a strategic moment in the morning testimony, as the defense has long argued that Jen's search occurred much earlier than prosecutors contend, which was essentially before John O'Keefe was found, not after. So Jackson pressed Whiffen on the details of the data, likely asking him to acknowledge that the phone did register activity at 2:27 a.m. related to that search. So Whiffen conceded that a browser tab for Google was indeed opened at 2:27 a.m., but he stood by his analysis that no search results were actually fetched or even asked until after 6 a.m. One significant moment in cross-examination was when the defense highlighted that the record of how long to die in cold was found in a forensic log file in a deleted state. So in more plain language, this means that the query was recovered from portions of the phone's data that are usually cleared or not readily visible to a user. And the defense implied that this could mean someone, perhaps Jen, attempted to delete evidence of the 2:27 a.m. search from her phone. Whiffen explained that finding such artifacts in a deleted state isn't unusual in digital forensics. Often data from apps will linger in temporary files, or in this case, a write-ahead log, even if a user tries to erase their history. Still, the very mention of the word deleted regarding that search gave the cross-examination a slightly more dramatic flair, if I'm trying to be unbiased here, but the defense used it to suggest that Jen McCabe or someone with access to her phone might have been trying to hide the timing of that Google query, bolstering the theory of a cover-up. Throughout the cross-examination, the defense hammered on the idea that if the search truly happened at 2:27 a.m., it would mean that Jen McCabe knew John O'Keefe was outside in the freezing cold well before anyone claimed to have found him. So they asked Whiffen tough questions to underline his point, saying essentially, isn't it possible, based on this 2:27 a.m. record, that the search was made then and not later? Like, isn't it just at least possible? Or how can you be 100% sure? To which Whiffen maintained his expert opinion that the actual search query was executed at 6:24 and not earlier. At that point, the jurors were left with a clear view of these two dueling timelines. And I guess it'll just be up to them to decide which side they believe more. Now, in Ian Whiffen's testimony, though it was technical, it could have a major impact on both sides of the case. For the prosecution, his explanation is helpful to diffuse the most suspicious interpretation of that Google search, right? By showing that the query was made around 6:23, the prosecution can argue that Jen McCabe was simply desperate for information in the moment, perhaps trying to figure out if there was any hope of saving her friend or how long he might have been suffering. And Whiffen's analysis backs up the state's position that there's nothing nefarious about Jen's search once you understand the timing of it. But obviously that, you know, really interferes with the defense's theory. After Whiffen's testimony, the jury was dismissed, and then the focus shifted to a voir dire hearing involving two crash reconstruction experts from ARCA, who are Daniel Wolf and Andrew Rentschler. We hear about ARCA a lot, but they pronounce it ACA because of their accents. I guess they're not really pronouncing the R. So you constantly hear Judge Cannoni say ACA experts, like ACA. Okay, anyway, ARCA Inc. is an engineering consulting firm that specializes in accident reconstruction. And in Karen Reed's first trial, two of their experts, Daniel Wolf and Andrew Rentschler, testified that the injuries sustained by John O'Keefe were inconsistent with being struck by a vehicle. This testimony supported the defense's theory that Reed was being framed. And in my opinion, it's like their biggest piece of evidence. However, during the ongoing retrial, it came to light that the defense had paid ARCA nearly $24,000 for their services. And this payment contradicted earlier claims that the experts were independent and not compensated by the defense. But the prosecution argued that this financial relationship should have been disclosed as it could indicate bias in the experts' testimonies. This is a huge deal. And back in February, when all this came to light, there was this really dramatic moment in the courtroom when Judge Bev found out about this and said, quote, "The Commonwealth just provided the court with information that causes me grave concern. The implications of that information may have profound effects on the defense and defense counsel," end quote. And she was like trembling when she read it back in February. I remember this clear as day because I had so many people asking me like, oh my God, what do you think this is about? Now, here's the thing. In legal proceedings, transparency about expert witness compensation is crucial. If an expert is paid by one side, it can introduce questions about their impartiality. Failing to disclose these payments can be seen as an attempt to mislead the court and the jury. So in this case, the defense's failure to disclose the payment to ARCA raises concerns about the integrity of their argument and the validity of the experts' testimonies. It also opens the door for the prosecution to challenge the credibility of the defense's evidence. And the judge's strong reaction indicates that this issue could have significant ramifications for the trial's outcome. And I personally feel like this is all foreshadowing to Judge Bev disallowing the experts to testify, which would be a catastrophic blow to the defense, considering that this is one of the biggest pieces of evidence that they have to bolster their theory. But before she makes any decision on the matter, the court goes through a process called voir dire, which is essentially a mini hearing without the jury present, where the judge hears evidence or a witness's testimony and decides if it should be allowed in front of the jury or not. So Special Prosecutor Hank Brennan questioned Wolf intensely about his communications with defense attorney Alan Jackson, and Wolf admitted to deleting text messages with Jackson, stating that it was his routine practice, and he also acknowledged using the encrypted messaging app Signal for further communications, which raised concerns about transparency. So I watched the majority of this go down yesterday while I was working at our ice cream cone, so I just kind of had it in the background. But it did get preheated between Brennan and Wolf multiple times. Brennan was essentially trying to break Daniel Wolf down to admit that he has a more personal relationship with Alan Jackson. Like, at one point, Daniel Wolf referred to Alan Jackson as just Alan. And Hank Brennan is like, oh, so you're friendly with him? You guys are friends? It was actually kind of funny to watch because it was almost like a girl accusing her boyfriend of talking to another girl. Like, oh, so what, you guys are friendly? You guys talk about your families? That's normal? That's normal for you? Like, anyway, if you were there, you just had to see it. I'm actually going to play you a clip of some of the contention between Hank Brennan and Daniel Wolf because it got pretty fiery at times, but take a listen.
Report in my analysis. Do you think it's helpful not answering the question and just diverting every time I ask you something? Do you think that's helpful? Do you want to answer my question or do you want me to move on?
I think I answered your question.
I don't think you did, so I'll ask it one more time.
All right, no comments, please.
Do you think that providing a direct examination to the defense before you testified is in any way assisting preparing for your testimony?
Again, I don't know if he even utilized it, sir. And certainly if the Commonwealth had reached out, they could have gotten a copy of that as well.
So as you can hear, Hank Brennan is getting pretty frustrated with Daniel Wolf and believes that he kept trying to divert answering questions. And there were even points when he would say, how many phone calls do you think you had with Alan Jackson? And Daniel Wolf would say, I don't know, a handful. And Hank Brennan would say, I don't know what a handful is. What's a handful? And Daniel would say, like four or five. And Brennan would say, well, was it four or was it five? And are you 100%? I mean, it was just like, so we're badgering at this point. And every time he'd answer a question, or not every time, but often when Hank Brennan was questioning Daniel Wolf, he kept adding extra commentary. And that's why he kept getting objections, because when he's saying, well, I don't think you're answering, do you think diverting the question or ignoring my question is helpful? Like, those comments are not necessary and not appropriate during a trial. So anyway, we'll see what ends up happening. The court is now awaiting a second report from ARCA, which The judge is requesting it be completed by May 7th, and the admissibility of the ARCA expert's testimony still remains uncertain pending that further review. It looks like that report is actually due next week, a week from today. So we probably won't have an answer until after that. And of course, I'll keep you guys updated. But that is all for today's update on day 4, which was yesterday, the 28th. And I'll go ahead and recap today's proceedings later tonight or tomorrow morning. But thank you so much for listening to these recaps. And if you're enjoying them, leave me a comment or a review. Let me know what you think. If you have any questions or thoughts about this case, you can leave a comment on Spotify. You can go to Instagram and comment on the post there and I will see it. You can also go to my website, mamamystery.com, and leave me a comment there. And that sends me messages anonymously. So if you have thoughts on this case, but you just want to keep it anonymous, you can use that. So thank you so much. I hope you guys have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy to see if you could save when you bundle your home and auto policies. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.